Solve, secure, protect. Look to Patel for the independent thinking and cross-disciplinary focus it takes to advance security and safety in a changing world. They provide their clients with integrated solutions that secure our nation and help solve challenges within infrastructure, environment, emerging threats, and deployable mission-ready technology. Their teams leverage their deep expertise to develop science and technology for a healthier, safer, and more sustainable world. Visit Battelle.org to learn how Battelle makes the impossible possible.
Welcome to From the Crow's Nest, a podcast on electromagnetic spectrum operations, or EMSO. I'm your host, Tal Alshaboot, filling in for our usual host, Ken Miller. Thanks for listening. In today's episode, we are going to talk about a topic that has become the focal point of world news the past few days. We are closely monitoring the unfolding of the Russia-Ukraine conflict and what that means for the state of EMSO. Joining me today to help discuss this topic is Jet editor John Knowles. John, how are you doing today?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, John. We want to dive right into this topic of this episode. Looking at the military capabilities in play from Russia, Ukraine, US, NATO, what are some of your thoughts on how this conflict has unfolded over the past week?
I guess my first take is to remind myself and everyone who's watching what's going on that, you know, Ukraine is a war zone and the news coming out is just a trickle. So we've got a very spotty picture of what's happening on the ground. That said, from what I can tell and from the news reports, Ukrainian forces don't seem to be doing a lot of fighting in the open, where the Russian ISR assets can easily find them, or Russian strike capabilities like the artillery, strike aircraft, etc., can more easily target them or get battle damage assessment. So you're seeing that the nature of the fighting seems to be the Ukrainian forces are concentrating more in the cities, and that poses a much more challenging fighting environment for the Russian forces. Urban warfare is very difficult in any sense. And from an EMS standpoint, urban warfare shortens the lines of communications for the defenders, and it usually presents a much more congested EMS environment. So that's a much more challenging environment for the Russians to be operating in.
Yeah, thank you for that. So top U.S. space officials this week said it's likely that Russia's invasion of Ukraine will extend to space, predicting continued GPS jamming and spoofing and urging military and commercial space operators to be prepared for possible cyber attacks. What is your take on this?
I think that those are very sound warnings. We haven't seen that yet, from what I can tell. It's, again, important to remember that we're 5 days into the conflict at this point. And so this is really an opening phase. This conflict will probably evolve depending on today. They're discussing a ceasefire. And there's going to be a lot of different phases of the war probably playing out over time, even if the Ukrainian government decides to negotiate a truce and stops fighting, if Russian forces occupy the country, an insurgency could evolve. So the space discussion right now doesn't seem to be a factor. But again, we're 5 days in and Russia really hasn't use the full brunt of its capabilities, its EW capabilities, or its cyber capabilities, frankly. So right now, I think we have to watch and wait, but I don't see that happening in maybe at a very localized level. They're doing some GPS jamming, but right now it doesn't seem to be a widespread effect, and certainly not extending outside of the country.
Hello, everyone. I want to take a short break to thank Battelle for their continued support for our From the Crow's Nest podcast. It's always great to hear from them, and I am pleased to be here with Rusty Cole Morgan, Navy veteran and division manager at Battelle. Rusty, thanks for joining me here on From the Crow's Nest. It's great to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks very much, and thanks for the opportunity.
You've had an interesting career with extensive stints in the Navy and industry. What brought you to Battelle, and how does your experience align with Battelle's mission?
Yeah, thanks for that, Ken. And I did have a very rewarding career as a Navy pilot. And as I transitioned through a number of companies in industry, I continued to have great experiences because I got the chance to work alongside eye-watering technical talent. What I'm most excited about at Battelle is how our campus is literally surrounded by an impressive depth of relevant applied researchers. That uniquely embedded in-house research capability serves as a foundation as we focus on solutions to the world's hardest problems. We strive to create a better world through science, and the RavenStar technology is the latest example of a hard problem with wide society benefits.
In the past, we've heard here on From the Crow's Nest from your colleagues, Doug Thornton and Molly Engel. They provided some intriguing insights about the RavenStar antenna. And can you tell our listeners a little bit about the challenges of this trade space and what you're trying to address with this game-changing technology?
Well, the bottom line is that users have had to sub-optimize their capabilities and needs with traditional design approaches in the RF spectrum. Traditionally, electronic warfare and command and control users want a number of capabilities that create a challenging design space. Those needs are typically long ranges, maximum throughput, and low probability of intercept, low probability of detection. They want those ranges for more effective operational reach or standoff, and they want more throughput for the increased data that leads to actionable intelligence. And those tight control of the emissions, they want those for either maximizing energy on a particular bearing or limiting the ability to detect or interfere with their emissions. It's not an easy trade space, but the flexibility of the RavenStar architecture gives them more of what they want operationally.
So what does the RavenStar do that makes it optimized across these critical performance needs, and how does that stand out from traditional approaches?
Well, our frequency agility gives operators flexibility to work an ultra-wide portion of the spectrum through a single low-swap software-defined aperture. RavenStar co-designed extremely wide-band aperture arrays with co-located advanced electronics. And this allows a compact, frequency-flexible RF solution. Our approach minimizes conventional antenna feature trade-off and allows significant design flexibility for delivering the spectrum dominance that's needed.
We've been tracking this program here on the show. How mature is RavenStar today?
We put it at a TRL 6 after testing that we've done in December of 2023, and continuing into this year, we'll do field tests, accompanying lab demonstrations, and development performance on formal efforts with different DoD customers, all that are pointed toward a continued maturation of the RavenStar design. They show the RavenStar's ability is to support all domain missions that require multiple communications.
Well, thank you, Rusty, for joining me here on the show. It's always great to hear from the Patel team. And now it's time to get back to our show.
Okay, so what role do you foresee EW playing in the next steps in the Russia-Ukraine crisis? How large is the scale when it comes to using EW and SIGINT in Russian operations?
Russia has been modernizing really since about 2006, 2008. So they've been modernizing their forces overall, their conventional forces, but especially their electronic warfare and SIGINT capabilities. They have increased their capacity, meaning the number of units that have new equipment, and they've been somewhat increasing their capability, meaning how advanced the technology is, the electronic warfare and SIGINT technology that they're developing. But they really were crawling out of in the 1990s, they really didn't do a lot of widespread innovation. And a lot of the designs that they have are not necessarily state of the art by Western standards. So you have to kind of weigh that capability and capacity. Those are two sort of variables that you have to look at. So Russia has designed, I think, its EW capabilities and SIGINT capabilities to focus on its near abroad. So those countries like Ukraine, Belarus, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, those countries that Russia views as being within its sphere of influence, and that it wants to be able to operate in those countries freely. So in that sense, Ukraine has seen since 2014 what Russia has been doing, obviously, in not only in Ukraine, but in Syria and places like that. And in that, Russia seems to be honing its concepts of operations, its cyber EW and information warfare sort of lash up that they use, that they've been using. And so from what I understand of Russia's capabilities and capacity, Russia hasn't really unleashed most of that yet, maybe at a very local level. But the Russian forces seem to be moving down highways through the city, you know, encircling cities and moving on and moving throughout the country. And so, again, Ukrainian forces don't seem to be trying to challenge them too much in the open. They seem to be coming to the cities. And so that's going to create a challenge for, you know, you can have the best EW capability, but fighting in the city is going to neutralize that to a certain extent. And just because, again, shorter lines of communications, you're more vulnerable to IEDs and ambushes in cities, things like that. And so it just is a much more challenging environment. And that's going to really stress out the Russian capabilities, because again, they may have a lot of capacity, a lot of equipment, but if it's not advanced enough, it just may not perform as well in those urban environments. It's hard to say at this point, because Russia's really never gotten itself into that kind of a fight. But Ukraine, again, has had a look at what Russia can do to a certain extent in the east of the country. So it's again, 5 days in and a lot to be determined. But I can foresee multiple phases of this war, depending on how it goes. Even if the Ukrainian government negotiates a truce and it does evolve into an insurgency in the western part of the country, Russia could find itself facing drone attacks and RCID attacks, roadside bombs, things like that. And it's seen that in the past in Syria and places like that. But again, the EMS contest is probably going to go through several phases. It could. I shouldn't say it will, but it could go through several phases. And it's just something to keep an eye on, because Russia's equipped itself to deal with a much more conventional fight.
So what are the implications of this for the U.S.? What do we need to look out for?
I think the U.S. is obviously not committing to operations in Ukraine at the moment. NATO is not committing to that. So right now you're going to have a active Russian military force right up against NATO allies. So there's going to be a lot of observation, a lot of ISR going on across the Polish border into Ukraine and probably into a little bit into Belarus. And there's going to be a lot of understanding how, you know, we're going to have a fairly good look. We had this in Turkey too, of Russia deploying to Syria and being right on the border and being able to see how they're operating. But we're going to see it on a much larger scale. This is probably the biggest test Russia has had militarily since the end of the Cold War. So we're seeing probably more complete aspects of their operational concepts and equipment capabilities than we have in the past. So for the U.S., this is a fairly good look at how Russia is going to operate and fight if they ever got into a conflict with NATO forces. The other thing I think it's important is looking at not just the equipment they have, but Russia has reorganized as well. They've reorganized their forces over the past decade, and they have pushed EW down into smaller and smaller units. And so it's a good chance to see how that is working. And if Russia is conducting a lot of electronic warfare right now in these first days of the conflict, it's probably doing that among those smaller units that are directly supporting forces in the east of the country or as they move around on the highways and places like that. So it's a good way to gauge how not just the equipment, but how Russia's operational concepts have evolved and how effective they are. And so the West is probably looking at that, because we're debating in the West, especially in the United States, U.S. Army and others, how far down we can push EW into our organizational structure. And that's a very important question, because it drives what kind of equipment you buy, it drives how many personnel you train and how you train them, and in that operational flexibility that you want from that. And we haven't done that in a long time, to push EW down that low. So it's a good chance to see how Russia operates and if that is an effective strategy for them.
That will conclude this episode of From the Crow's Nest. Thank you, John, for joining me. I hope that you join me again in the near future.
Thank you, Talia.
Thank you all for listening.
This podcast is brought to you by Battelle, the world's largest independent, not-for-profit, applied science and technology organization. Since 1929, their mission has been to translate scientific discovery and technology advances to benefit society. Through markets such as health, environment, infrastructure, industry, and national security, Battelle has been delivering cutting-edge solutions that impact the well-being of the world and help keep us safe at home. To learn more, go to battelle.org/connect. That's BATTELLE.org/connect.